Ed Komarek, longtime UFO investigator researcher. His books are available on Amazon and on his website.
They don't have to have the government's permission to think and understand the nature of extraterrestrial reality, and that's through the study of encounter cases. And the numbers of encounter cases are just huge.
We're going to just dive into this because you have done such a tremendous amount of research. You and I also have something in common. We are fans of Artie Six Killer Clark. And that is crucial because the way she covers this from the indigenous perspective. So why were you so attracted to Artie's work? Because I was thrilled to find out that, yes, this made a connection for you.
My friend Mike Jameson got into her a few years ago. And he kind of mentioned that I should get the book. And, you know, like most people, it didn't really register, you know, that she was that important. Finally, I realized that she was, and I got the books. It went from there. And what I found out with her is I've been in encounter cases for 55 years. The importance was that from those 4,000 cases that she compiled personally over 35 or 30 years, she distilled down a good summary of cases from highly predatory to highly altruistic that helps us to understand their overall perspective as to what ETs are doing here, who they are, where they come from, and all that.
The thing is, there's such a diverse population of ETs. In some cases, I've seen where they have researched about 115 different species, however you want to refer to them, visitors, and that makes it complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard that the same thing about 20 years ago, that there were like 120 that the government knew about, give or take some, depending on how they were classified.
Your research, how many people have you spoken to?
Well, you mean how many cases have I studied?
Yeah.
Probably in the thousands. I first started, got interested when I first got involved in UFOs in the 1970s with UFO Contact International. A lady in Texas, Aileen Edwards, put out a contactee newsletter, and I started studying contactee cases and encounter cases way back in the 70s. And so I've been at it for now for about 55 years.
You've gone through an entire spectrum of first absolute denial, completely it does not exist, to being able to get dribs and drabs of, well, this might have happened and that might have happened. And now full circle to, yes, we, the government, acknowledge that there are UFOs. They don't get into the ET element, and that's still being hush-hushed. But there are people, whistleblowers, coming forward saying, yes, there is evidence. What, for you, has been the biggest change?
Well, it's been slow going as far as the government disclosing the truth to the public, unfortunately. And we held demonstrations back in the 90s in front of the White House, front of the Pentagon, front of the GAO, hoping to spark, you know, more public interest and get more pressure on the government to disclose. But that hasn't really happened. And it's like, you know, pulling teeth to get people to realize that this is a bunch of political problem, as is a scientific problem, because the data is being manipulated. And so what I realized was really it started way back 55 years ago that there was another way. There was another way to get around, and they don't have to have the government's permission to think and understand the nature of extraterrestrial reality, and that's through the study of encounter cases. And the numbers of encounter cases are just huge. Albert Rosales has compiled 20,000 cases of humanoid cases from around the world from the last 100 years, but it's probably in the hundreds of thousands, if not millions of cases, you know, that maybe AI can, you know, pull all together at some point or whatever. So there's a huge number of counter cases. But what's important about Artie Clark is that most people are not going to spend, you know, most of their life like I have studying this to get to the bottom of things. And so the best thing for people to do is that are just getting into it, or even people who have been into it, you know, that are still wondering if they, you know, if they're extraterrestrial, whether they're multidimensional or whatever. Then you get to the point, you know, with Artie, she spells it out, the whole bottom line. You know, I call it full spectrum awareness. The military is into full spectrum dominance, but I'm into full spectrum awareness. And so I want to know what's going on. I want to know who these beings are, where they come from, what's our place in the scheme of things. And that goes back a long ways. That goes back over 12 billion years since life began evolving, and life only evolved on this planet maybe 4.5 billion years. So what's going on, you know, before our planet was even formed? You know, if you understand life, that life fills niches, and having a background in ecology and wildlife management, you realize that life, you know, started in the ocean, but there was this whole niche that was on land, but life in the ocean had to evolve to a certain point where it can move onto the land, and then it moved onto the land. And then what apparently has happened is the laws of nature apply across the universe, and once the life has evolved to the point of moving out into space in artificial habitats, you know, that is created, like, you know, we're, you know, our ships, you know, out sailing the oceans now and whatever, are like self-contained cities, you know, cruise ships and whatever. So we're building artificial habitats. And once you can build artificial habitats, you know, you can move just about everywhere. You know, you can't probably move to the sun, but you can move into ice worlds, you know, water worlds, underground, in space. You can build artificial habitats everywhere, just about everywhere. But then the next thing is what happens, you know, even here on Earth, underground, on our moon, there seems to be artificial habitats where other beings have bases and are operating out of and whatever. So it looks like life has spread out across the universe living in artificial habitats. But then where do you go from there? Well, there are a lot of planets that are not suitable for long-term evolutionary development. You know, they may evolve microbial life or have atmosphere to, you know, evolve microbial life, but they don't have the billions of years like Earth has to develop and evolve, and it gets cut short by some catastrophe, and life on Earth almost got wiped out several times by catastrophes. So the Earth is, we're finding out through these encounter cases, that the Earth is a kind of a unique genesis planet in which life has been able to hang on and evolve, and now evolving us to where we too are building artificial habitats and moving out into space. The extraterrestrials are just way ahead of us. You know, they're actually terraforming the cases, and two cases in Artie Clark that I've got here indicate terraforming operations by both ethical extraterrestrials and predatory extraterrestrials. Yeah, and so life evolves along a certain sequence. It starts from single cells to multi-cells, you know, and on up. And this is not just on Earth. This is across the universe, apparently. And we can understand, even though we not yet can travel the universe, we can understand by those that have come here their evolutionary history by studying them. And so with nature evolving along certain guidelines or mathematically, you start with single cells and you have multi-cells, but then you got to have some kind of a structure. You got to either have an internal skeleton or an external skeleton in order to continue to hold all these cells together and organize these cells. And so you either end up with an exoskeleton or an endoskeleton. Well, the anthropods developed exoskeletons, you know, and eventually when they moved on to land, they became the insects of today. And the endoskeletons evolved into fishes and then into amphibians, reptiles, dinosaurs, mammals like ourselves and whatever. So there's two divergent types of structures that develop. And that's why when we get into the nature of the different type of extraterrestrials, the insectoids and the reptilians and whatever, that's because they have the same kind of structural line that we have. And if the asteroid that fell on the Earth 60 million years ago and wiped out the dinosaurs had not happened, you know, we probably wouldn't exist as mammals very much, because the reptiles would have evolved an intelligent species or whatever. And if the catastrophic thing had been even worse, we would maybe have an insect evolving on the plant, because wiped out everything but the insect, because insects are really tough. You know, as people know from cockroaches and stuff in their houses and whatever, insects are really tough with those exoskeletons and whatever. So where are we now? Where are we in the scheme of things? You know, this is what I'm trying to understand, and this is where Artie Clarke is really helpful.
There are a lot of contact cases right now that are focusing on the night terror of being abducted or whatever, having some kind of a close encounter like that. But when you get into the people who've had decades of interaction and observed and been able to observe different events with the ETs, they're saying, well, they're here to collect specimens, soil samples, water samples. They have been seen doing these kinds of gatherings of certain materials from us. You have to then assume that they're taking it somewhere. And in Artie's stories, one of the things I thought was interesting from, I think, Mesoamerica, that was one of the experiencers there was on a yearly schedule that he would go up on the ship and help them with their gardening. And these ships are massive. And just that was part of his, I guess, agenda, his assignment, his interaction with them was to be one of the gardeners who was helping them with their projects. I thought that was fascinating because it speaks to a larger thing that you're talking about with the terraforming. Those are also
the artificial habitat.
Yes. And they're so far advanced beyond us that they're able to come and go without us have any knowledge, because we don't believe the people who tell us these stories is the problem.
And that gets into another thing, is because the reason they can do things like that is because this a little book by UFOs Are With Us, Take My Word, by Leo Dorshek, that began with his encounters in the 1930s out in the wilds of the Dakotas, is that they have a time field on the ship that they use as a protective mechanism that radiates out from their craft for miles, I think, at least. And they can actually stop a bird in mid-flight and observe it and then release it in the time field. It goes on without any idea what had happened to it. And the same thing is that Preston Dennett has come up with cases in which somebody would be walking down the street and time would be frozen for everybody but that individual, who would then communicate with beings in the craft and whatever. And then when the craft flew off, the time field would, you know, and these people that had been frozen would just be, you know, start moving in time again and without any idea what happened. So with these technologies, you know, you can pretty much, you know, unless there's an accident or somebody makes a mistake or something or whatever, like one of Artie's cut cases in which, you know, the ET got left up in on the Tanana River near Fairbanks, Alaska, because he got so interested in the earth that he didn't get back to the ship in time and it left without him. So he got stuck here for a couple of weeks. So, you know, they make mistakes just like we do. Another one of Artie's cases, the snowplow on the road at 60 below zero up in Alaska or someplace or whatever, the ET stopped the snowplow and they landed in the road, and one got out and started walking toward the snowplow. But the impressions that the snowplow operator got were just cold, cold, cold. And the ET, it was just 60 below zero, and the ET turned around and went back into the craft. You know, it made a mistake. Its suit wasn't good enough to handle those kind of temperatures and whatever. So the ETs make mistakes, and also they just bump into people, you know, as they're going about their routine business on Earth. And like you say, collecting water samples, studying the ecology, studying anthropological studies. You've got cases in there about, you know, cultural ET anthropologists studying us, you know, that were cloned from some of our own people called, you know, I think there's a case called the Brothers. Through a selection of cases, you can get an idea of where our place is in the universe and who these other beings are and what they're doing and why there's so much interest in the earth and in humanity. And that's another thing. There's so many different types of humans coming here, extraterrestrial humans or humanoids or whatever. So it's hard to, you know, for us to even comprehend how that's possible. So you just got to pull all these little bits and pieces from all these quality encounter cases, and you have to be able to sort out the cons and the people that are in it for, you know, to build cults or, you know, or for money or scams, this, that, whatever is so frequent in our society. But over time, if you have somebody like Artie Clarke who really knows what she's doing, and she herself is being mentored by extraterrestrials to probably to write these books and give a balanced accounting to the people of Earth. That's just really important. That's why she just stands hand and shoulders above everybody else and why I promote her book so much.
The thing is, with her stories, it's a cross-cultural selection of people who may not talk to the Western researchers because they're not, they don't feel like they're trusted or valued, respected. Their stories, where she has researched, they are an indigenous culture who has been taught and believe in ETs, the Space Brothers, the whole nine yards. It exists in their culture. It isn't a fiction. It isn't a fantasy. It's part of their heritage. And they're very careful about who they talk to, whether or not you're authentic, you're legit, you're trying to make a fast buck. It's one of those things where she's able to go in those societies and talk to people and get information that's valuable and valid, but still considered on the fringe. And, you know, that's where we are.
Yeah, and it's hard enough for the people to confine in her, and they would only, 95% of them would only do it if she didn't divulge their names or identities or whatever, because they're more afraid of the people in their lives, those closest to them, you know, would cause a problem, or they could lose their job by talking about this. But with the Indians and with the indigenous people, the cover-up hasn't been so effective in slowing down the understanding of what's going on. You know, the 80-year-old cover has been much more effective against, apparently against, you know, Europeans than it has been against some of the native peoples who have, like you say, the history that goes back of encounter cases and whatever. And in many cases, it's not just a lifetime of them encountering the extraterrestrials, but generations that are with the extraterrestrials.
If we look at our own, the research that's going on right now with the out-of-body stuff, the NDEs, even going into the drug use that induce certain types of experiences, Terrence McKenna also addressed an ET experience, that kind of thing. Well, the time thing, that's what I find fascinating, that people report having an experience where they have, especially like a coma case recently, a woman experienced decades while she was in the coma, but she was only in the coma two or three months. Again, the time thing I think is super important. We already have research that tells us that we can be in an altered state where we experience either a short duration or a long duration, but our time in our reality does not match up. And that's, I think, is huge because it gives proof and validation to what the ET experiencers are saying, where I was gone, I came back, and I was gone for visiting other planets, and only 3 minutes had transpired in my normal time, but I felt like I was there for weeks and months. And, you know, that's, I think, fascinating that we're just now kind of beginning to put those pieces together.
Yes, that's a really big picture. And I don't know, maybe we can, you know, talk about a couple of these cases, whether I could read a little bit. You think that's possible?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, this is on page 40 of More Encounters with Star People, on He Made Me Feel Like He Was an Old Friend. And this is a case that she had where this doctor that she knew decided to tell his story as long as it was kept confidential, and he'd been coming back from the hospital and he hit a deer. And he got out of his car to see, you know, what the damage was on his car and the situation with the deer. And the deer stood up and turned into an extraterrestrial humanoid in a tight bodysuit. And they began to engage in a conversation. And since both of them considered themselves healers, they had something in common between themselves. Then it goes on from there. I'll quote, "Did he speak? No, not as you and I speak. He was able to communicate with his thoughts, telepathy. Did he say why he was visiting Earth? Not specifically, only he liked the planet and the various species found here. He said there were many planets like Earth, but few had the diversity of wildlife. Did he reveal if he abducted people and animals, I asked? Not for experimental reasons. He said that they had taken humans to see other planets, but only with the individual's permission. He said there were many humans who are willing and enthusiastic about leaving the Earth and starting over. If they meet their rigorous psychological tests or are nonviolent, they can assist them in their desires. He said many planets shared the same atmosphere as Earth, but not in our solar system. If the atmosphere was not conducive to life, but had potential, their scientists were capable of altering the environment. Why do you think he told you this? When I hit him, I told him I was a doctor, then he should sit in my car and let me examine him. He told me he was a doctor, too, on his world, and he was a healer. He said he had already healed himself from the collision. I told him, I think he told me because we shared the same profession, one colleague to another. Did he tell you how he healed himself? He said that they had perfected the means of healing with the mind. He said that one day humans would be able to do the same. He said there were a few healers on our planet, but most of them are scorned by medical profession. Your story is amazing. Did he tell you anything else that you were willing to share for your next book? With your permission, he laughed and nodded. As long as you change my name, he said. He said his planet was old in the scheme of things. Earth was not important. He said that he was one of the few from his planet who still came to Earth. He collected animal specimens for seeding other worlds. He claimed that for most of the beings in the universe, he knew of none that wanted to interfere with the planet despite some of the paths taken by world leaders. He was aware of the abduction experiments. He told me that one group had found human body adrenal glands were a good source of longevity enhancement when mixed with other elements. While they had been encouraged to stop these procedures, there was nothing that we can do to stop them. Their scientists have attempted to develop a means to help them improve their elements without the use of human adrenals, but have been unsuccessful. Anything else you remember? One thing, perhaps the most important. He said that there are several thousand intelligent life forms that do not like the attention that human abduction has brought to the existence of space travelers. He said the intent of his people was to travel and to explore, but not to change the culture. Few civilizations that travel in the universe have designs on Earth. Many uninhabited worlds are suitable for a life where they would meet no resistance. He said they only seed or colonize those planets that are uninhabited, and they never replace population. But he admitted that they take humans and put them on other planets. Isn't that a form of interfering? Not according to him. The humans chosen for their seed projects are ones that have nothing on Earth. What does that mean? I asked the same question. He said some had no family, others yearned for a new start in life, a different life. In some cases, whole families had willingly uprooted themselves and left the Earth. Okay, that's an ethical extraterrestrial case or whatever involving terraforming. And by the way, NAFO is big into terraforming, and people can get on the internet and study. NAFO has meetings and stuff on terraforming, you know, you can figure that out.
Yeah.
Another chapter is called Masters of Deceit. And these are the insectoid. This lady was one of the 20,000 people that are not influenced by the atmospheric gases or the mental powers of the mantis extraterrestrials or the gray extraterrestrials who are working together. The problem with most abductees is their memories are fragmented and confused and whatever. It's just like a wild animal in Africa. You shoot it with a dart. All it remembers is what it saw, the helicopter coming, and then it has fragmented memories. And the last thing it really kind of remembers clearly is the helicopter flying away. Everything in between is really foggy and confused. But then that's because of apparently, because of what she's saying here, the atmospheric gases and the craft that they have to be able to handle people, you know, without harming, you know, being harmed by people freaking out and that sort of thing and whatever, and to make them complacent. So in this case, so cases like this are very, very important because you get a lot of detail, very clear detail, because it's in the waking state and it's, you know, face to face. And it says, did you see any experiments being conducted on humans? Yes. And the stories about harvesting sperm and impregnating human females are true. Not because they are a dying race, but because they created hybrid species for seeding other planets. They also create clones. The hybrids and clones are used for seeding. Some of the clones are placed on Earth to interact with the human population. They also use adrenal glands from humans, but I have yet to discover their use. I'm working on that. Someone else mentioned adrenal functioning to me. He said it was for longevity experiments. But what about the seeding? They colonize other worlds with hybrids and clones. Why have they allowed you to learn these things about them? First of all, they think they are in control. Secondly, even if I do remember, what am I going to do with this knowledge? I'm a teacher in a rural town in Montana. People will say that I've gone crazy living here. Can you imagine what the skeptics would do if I told this story? I think they don't view me as a threat to their presence or the activities they're conducting. I have led them to believe I am under their control. While the majority of Americans believe in UFOs, the majority are still skeptical about hybrid babies and harvesting eggs and sperm. So they are not threatened that anybody will take me seriously. In fact, they seem to enjoy allowing me to know these things. Can you tell me what's the most amazing thing you learned about your abductors? They can take any form they wish. If you are a white American, they will plant in your mind the image of a white American. If you're Chinese, they will be Chinese. Anything else? There are so many people who hold out the belief that aliens will someday make themselves known to the people of Earth. The aliens I've met, and admittedly, they are not the only species in the universe visiting Earth, have no intention of making themselves known. The Earth is their laboratory. They have no respect for human life. Humans are only a means to the end. They are specimens to use to meet an objective. The aliens I know are inhuman and behave in very inhuman ways. Well, I would kind of, you know, disagree with that, because look at the way we treat animals. But what stands out most in your mind about them? I have had more than one occasion to observe them with other abductees. Although they show no emotion, they have little tolerance for resistors. They expect humans to be compliant, and I have watched them be very cruel to those who are not. Some humans have an ability to resist them. Others are extremely docile. Resistors get the worst treatment and the most pain. Therefore, I see them as malevolent. On the other hand, I have seen them perform surgeries and heal those who are compliant. I've always get the idea that they do it just for see if they can, like you and I might fix a broken toy. In my opinion, they are vindictive despite the fact that they show no emotion. Is there anything else you want to share tonight? Yes, they plant images in the minds of humans. For example, they can make men think that they have met the woman of their dreams or vice versa for women when there is no passionate alien female or male. They are objects of human imagination. They can make abductees feel their healing is from God's hands when it is no more than advanced medical science. They are masters of deceit. So tell me, are these encounters the reason you believe you cannot leave town? Currently, each time I have an encounter, I get more insight into the behavior. Behavior, sometimes this information will be valuable. That's the reason I am telling you. If you decide to write another book, be sure to include my story. I want the world to know what's really going on. Things are not always as they seem, close quotation. So this just gives your listeners an example of the quality and the amount of information that are in Artie's book.
There's a lot of variety. There are other people who are telling their stories who have had these encounters. There's an Australian, I think the book is Hair of the Alien, where he had an encounter. He's writing about it, the whole nine yards. He also had a piece of evidence, the DNA, the hair. And then Love and Saucers, another guy who's had lifelong experiences with ETs, aliens, others, and they have made a movie about it. These are people who have tried to tell their story, but it's so far out that it's very difficult for people to believe these kinds of things. My own personal experience, telepathic, and the ET was standing in front of me, totally invisible. I couldn't see. I had been warned and said, you have to get over your fear. And I'm like, well, you know, I've had certain encounters that I was afraid, and I think I've dealt with my fear. And then at 3 o'clock in the morning, when I heard this voice, it was kind of a mechanical voice. I felt that, you know, that fight or flight thing immediately froze. And I'm thinking, because I'm able to process at this point, that's what you're talking about. And there was a chuckle. I could hear the telepathic laugh, mm-hmm. because that was the demonstration of that's what's holding us back, is our automatic fail-safe fight or flight. It's meant to preserve us. Encountering something like this is so far out of our realm of awareness, understanding, knowing, we immediately go into safety mode and try to prevent ourselves from being hurt. We have to understand, in order to go forward, we need to evolve.
And that's what society as a whole is happening to go through with the cover-up and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and that's the thing of afraid of, well, if people get more knowledge about this kind of stuff happening, it's harder to control them.
What you have is this elite, you know, group of people, you know, on this planet who have managed to rise to power, you know, by influencing large numbers of people, and they don't want to give up their privileged position to something beyond that. It's like trying to keep people in Syria, you know, that are trying to escape Syria and the civil war in Syria to go to Europe, you know, to a better place. So So they've conspired to hold back human evolution, and it may go even further than that. They may actually have arrangements and agreements that some of the military people that are coming out and talking, that there may be, you know, Faustian agreements between these mantis gray insectoids with evolutionary insect or anthropod background that don't want this to come out because it'll interfere with their operations here.
Ed Komarek. His books include UFOs, Exopolitics, and the New World Disorder, available on Amazon. A quick break.
It's way beyond our ability to conceptualize and understand the nature of the universe around us. There seems to be some kind of acknowledgement amongst all the different extraterrestrials operating here to generally try to not involve themselves too much directly with us.
Longtime UFO investigator, researcher Ed Komarek. His books are available on Amazon and available for free on his website.
The thing that is a commonality is telepathy. Whatever you happen to be interested in, there's one unifying force, and that's consciousness. And if we are able to improve, upgrade, evolve our telepathic abilities, which is a natural part of being human. If you tune it out, something says don't turn left and you turn left anyway. That was telepathic. That was saying, okay, either you're going to go into this or not. Somebody's trying to give you a heads up. You practice that, or can practice that, with animals. With my pets, there was a recent incident where the dog, she's just like three, and I got this very clear image of Strawberry Pie, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I had stepped out for a moment, just let her in, was still standing outside, and I had this image thinking, my image was the dog maybe getting on the table, and I thought, well, she's not going to get on the table. And then I see this image of her with the pie. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, it was too close to the edge. I go in, say no from the door. There she is, right, the picture she sent me. That's what we get from pets and animals around us. We get these images and pictures when we tune in. And she's just a beginner, so she's giving me certain kinds of pictures. She also gave me one when somebody was in the driveway. Those kinds of things are a clue that we have the ability to evolve and become more consciously aware of things in our environment, which includes the ETs that may or may not want to be seen.
Yeah, I think this is quantum entanglement. I think every time whatever you focus your attention on, you become entangled. You know, it reaches out. You become entangled, you know, with those things, people, and events, and histories, and whatever that you're interested in, and confirms your validity of your reality that you exist in. So these coincidences, these synchronicities seem to have something to do with this entanglement and intercommunication between species and between humans and between even life itself. And the problem is our imagination can run wild on some of this, and it's difficult sometimes to separate what is a true telepathic experience versus what is a fantasy or imagination. For instance, my friend Marianne, I met her when I first met her. She was having the typical abduction issues of blood on the sheets and nosebleeds and clothes on backwards and all this kind of thing, as well as with her sister and whatever. And then after I interviewed her that night, in the middle of the night, it was like these bees or insects buzzing that were very upset and said, stay out of it. It's none of your business. Very angrily. And I said, whoa, what have I, got myself into? And so I backed out from that relationship. And then a couple of years, I kind of just said, somebody else will have to handle this, a higher power or whatever. And a couple of years later, she came back and she had remembered some encounter cases from childhood in which she had encountered Nordic extraterrestrials and whatever who were ethical and who were actually operating in this area and been operating in this area for a long time. So I tended to think that was real, and the way I act, if I'm threatened, I'll tend to back off because I kind of move with the dial, move forward till I hit resistance, and when I hit resistance, I'll back off. So this was a case of possible telepathic contact with the mantis grays. But you got to remember, the mantis grays, like it explains in Ari's book, a lot of these are individuals. even in the TW of Charles Hall and the Tall White, he said they're individuals. There was a general there that scared him to death anywhere he was supposed to because he felt this individual was dangerous, whereas there was a Tall White doctor that he felt he could have hugged, but he never would have, but he could have, and not, and his life wouldn't have been in danger. So you're dealing with individuals, and so I think I may have contacted looking up at the sky at night when I was a young man and asking, what is your relationship to us? And the answer I got back was a bit disturbing, and because it said our relationship to you is like your relationship to your garden. And this was probably a mantis, probably an intellectual type mantis. He wasn't somebody that was, a worker, a lowly worker, that was involved in the abductions that I stuck my nose into the middle of.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted me not to, be involved in or whatever. So I had that experience. And then I've had quite a few different experiences with the television, been turned on in the middle of the night for them to show me these are human ethical extraterrestrials that I'm connected, telepathically connected with, I believe, turn on the television at night for something that they wanted to show me or
right.
something.
Yeah.
So you have a lot of experiences, following me home when I first saw their craft. I built my own intelligence gathering network in my local area, found three contact key people, got involved with them, went out at night. I almost had a direct encounter myself, but my friend freaked out, and so I had to deal with her and didn't actually meet them face-to-face. They followed me home that night and flew off the corner of my property just to see who I was, where I came from, and then later they scanned me in the field and whatever, because they have their concerns, their security concerns, who is this guy that got in the middle of their affairs that they had going on and with their contact people that were actually collaborating and working with them and helping on projects and stuff.
That's a big part of it. I remember when I interviewed Denise Stoner and Kathleen Martin, right after that, the thing that really struck me after I'm talking about their experiences and all, my husband, we went to bed and he woke up with his t-shirt backwards and inside out. Okie doke. So that was my contact, my interaction with them that I believe triggered the curiosity to come and pay us a visit. That to me was way too coincidental. And that's what I have mm-hmm. seen in terms of these kinds of encounters. When you meet somebody, then sometimes that kind of activity will then manifest in your reality. And
yeah, well, it's our reality. It's theirs and our reality, and that they are no different than we are. They are evolved beings that evolve species just like we're evolving and whatever, and they have their concerns. They have their security concerns. Our government's trying to shoot them down. I asked them whether I could, through my contact person, whether I could meet them face to face, and they said no. I had a big mouth and I talked too much, and I was all over the internet. That was like 30 years ago. And they had security concerns, plus they were being chased and hassled by our military. I thought seeing the jet playing cat and mouse with them and whatever. So, and it also puts the contact person in a certain amount of jeopardy as far as, with our military, because they don't approve of us hanging out with extraterrestrials. So it's to protect us, too, that they don't have face-to-face meetings. If it hadn't been for the hostility of the military back 30 years ago when I was involved in all this, personally, I think I would have had face-to-face contact. They even allowed me to see video that my friend shot of their craft on the ground and other stuff that we then had to destroy after I saw it. So a lot of it is the cover-up is keeping a lot of us from being able to interact and to evolve and move into this domain with the extraterrestrials on a very beneficial, in a very, very beneficial way, and then to deal with these mantis phase abductors that are apparently abducting our people and moving them to other worlds that they're terraforming and whatever.
Artie talks about one case where the daughter is extremely involved with a certain ET and she's preparing to leave, and her mom, she meets the mom and the daughter and they are planning. They're going to leave with the ET. She asks them why and they're excited about leaving. They didn't really have any commitments here that would prevent mm-hmm. them from going. And then she said after a certain date, she was unable to connect with the daughter or the mom again. They were gone.
Yeah, that was another case. So that was what's so good about Artie, because of her own extraterrestrial contact with human extraterrestrials that guided her. It's actually an extraterrestrial operation that involves her to give balance, you know, to educate the public in a balanced manner. So what she was so good at, because she was drawing from these 4,000 cases, holy mackerel, you know, can you imagine 4,000 case interviews, taped interviews within 30 or 35 years? That's fairly frequent. And then being able to be that knowledgeable, to then draw from those cases, that all that information, the specific ones that are the most important to educate the public. And that's why I go way out of my way and say she's head and shoulders above all other encounter case compilers and whatever, because she personally interviewed these people, and she's specifically trained as a cultural anthropologist, and she could believe the people and get them to open up, because she herself was in contact with and being mentored by a human extraterrestrial.
I interviewed her 3 or 4 times, and I've only got 2 of them to pull from. One of my favorite stories, he was in the military, and at some point in the military, he was approached by an ET, and they said, well, we can get you out of here. And he said, no, that's not a good idea. And then he offered to tell her there are portals and you can find them and they exist. And then she and I had this conversation about, I don't know that we would want to go. And then recently, somebody in my area who researches this and does a lot of paranormal shows on her own, she demonstrated on YouTube a place where they went just outside of St. Louis, this back porch where you could see them stick their hand into an area that is a portal. And I'm thinking, you have no idea what's on the other side. You do not know if there's like a vacuum and it can suck you in. Yeah, I'm thinking all the things of, okay, don't just rush forward because this is still an unknown. But demonstrating that there's a portal right on the porch of this person's property.
Yeah, if you remember, Artie Clark had a case on that, you know, that traveled the extraterrestrial highway, I think it was the title of it. Mm-hmm. In one of her cases, in which the portals would open up at different places, and if you're there at the right time or whatever, you can move into that portal, and then you could travel all over the cosmos.
Yeah.
And then it's also, you remember with the Blue Men, the cases of the Blue Men, in which, you know, they said that they could send him home, the soldier. They wanted to protect him and send him home. They said no, because that would make he'd be AWOL and he'd be prosecuted for that or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, yeah. That's not good in our reality.
Yeah, and then there's other cases I ran into here, like locally, if people would just, you know, drill down in their local areas, they'll see just how much ET activity is going on everywhere on this planet, underground, in the air, underwater, in space, and whatever, that the universe is highly populated, maybe even overpopulating now after 12 billion years, that it's all going on right underneath our noses. And we're just oblivious to it, like a bunch of ants in a cow pasture. You know, they don't have any understanding not only of cows unless they get stepped on, or the farm itself, you know.
One time I went right outside my front door and happened to look at the right place, right time, up in the sky above a tree, and thought I saw something, someone, a being in that space. And then it was a double take where the being, whatever it was, and I actually reported it to MUFON, where there's really no category for this. But anyway, the being went over to try and hide behind a tree. This is above the ground, so it's 20, 30 feet up in the air. And then I looked away, and I looked back. It had come back out and, again, darted behind the tree. I was not supposed to see it. All I could say is what it was doing was creating something that would look like a gray space in the middle of that sky. So I knew there was something there, but it did not want me to see, to get any kind of idea of what it was. Either that or my mind couldn't make heads or tails of it, and all I got was this gray smudge. But I knew it was there. And the fact that it moved the way that it did, that's what got my attention to start out with, was I'm seeing something. And so it had to focus for a second, think about it, and then look back and try to focus. And that's always what gets me. When they know when you're focusing on them, the one that appeared in my bedroom, which was like a small dinner plate sized UFO, my dog saw it first and growled. And I thought the dog was growling at the cat, but that's what woke me up. And so I was trying not to interfere between their dynamic, and very slowly opened my eyes. That's when I could see it, because I wasn't focusing fully like I would focus daytime. It's nighttime. I'm trying to just barely move so as not causing the attention. the UFO, the minute, because I'm like, oh my gosh, there's something, here it is hovering just inside the window, and I'm trying, I can't get a camera, I know it's going to move, and I'm trying to figure out how to imprint it so that I can remember what I'm looking at, and the minute I really tried to focus, then it shifted and went outside the window, and I was like, darn it, and so what am I going to do? Go back to bed. That's it. And so these kinds of things that happen, there's nowhere to go with them. There is, you can just say, this is what I experienced.
It's way beyond our ability to conceptualize and to understand the nature of the universe around us. There seems to be some kind of acknowledgement amongst all the different extraterrestrials operating here to generally try to not involve themselves too much directly with us. In fact, there was one case in Artie's book, I think, in which the extraterrestrial actually told the witness that I shouldn't be talking to you about this or whatever. But, he was breaking the rules. So there's some kind of, I don't think it's just one galactic federation. I think there's many different types of federations and mutual defense groups and just like our NATO and stuff like that. So you don't know. You know, we just have no idea what's going on in our world, and trying to understand where our place is in the universe takes a lot of time and a lot of work. And because I've dedicated my life to that, you know, and not to some materialistic pursuit or whatever, my life and then my own. So I've been able to get to this point of awareness that the universe is highly populated. It's here. It's underground. Different races have different underground bases that they operate here on Earth. What a lot of the interest is here on Earth has to do with terraforming now. They live in artificial habitats, but there are benefits to living on planets and amongst the wildlife like we have here on Earth. I enjoy nature very much on Earth and diversity on, you know, of nature. And I think a lot of the extraterrestrials do too. And so they moved into terraforming. They're so far advanced now, and a lot of them have actually moved, like the Blue Men or whatever it talks about in one of Arnie's books, where they have moved beyond corporal physical reality. Some of them have, the scientists did, but some of them haven't, but they still communicate between the ones that have evolved out of corporeal reality and the ones that are still in corporeal reality still communicate with each other and are kind of like consider themselves kind of one species, I guess, still or whatever. So it really gets down to boiling things. What does it mean to be human? Because we're inhabiting a human body, we think we can identify as being human. But what if our next life we enter into a mantis, an anthropod body, you know, an insectoid mantis type or whatever, you know, then we would think of ourselves as a mantis or a gray or a reptilian. So it really gets you to thinking, you know, what does it mean to be an eternal being? And that's one of the articles that I wrote on my website, articles for publication, was what does it mean to be an eternal being and to inhabit different bodies? Because the body just seems to be a mechanism of working within that particular space or that particular reality. You need a body, you know, you need a submarine to go deep down in the ocean, or you need a car to travel from here to California, or a jet plane to travel here to Europe. You need a vehicle to get you there. So our body is a mind-controlled vehicle that we use to experience this reality and learn the lessons that we need to learn in this. And we are not our body. We are all eternal beings that live in and use bodies that come and go.
When I first started channeling about 25 years ago, when the things that happened in my life changed the direction I was going, this interactive nightlight electrical phenomena, one of the things that they taught me about was transmigration of soul. And that meant that when we go between, after death, in between, we change forms. And whether it's an animal, whether it's a piece of grass, this consciousness, this being, this element that we are, this essence, has a lot of choices where we can learn each and every time that we choose to become corporeal, then we take that forward. And what they also said was it isn't always helpful for you to remember that, because it can be confusing.
Or it can be very traumatic, because you have a very traumatic life,
yeah.
You know, and then it interferes with this life because it intrudes and and causes problems in this world.
Well, you want to go back and solve all the other problems. And it's like, no, you went forward. So stop dealing with all the other stuff because you actually learned something and now you're carrying it forward. So don't get caught up with the details of what you left unfinished. You'll fix them eventually. And that was the fun part.
It's kind of like the intuition. You lose your memories, but you intuit things. You know not to go in this direction or this is going to be a blind alley that other people get trapped in, whatever. So how do you know that? Well, I think it comes from just experiences in the past lives. And some of us that experienced a lot of lives on this planet have, we've murdered and killed and been murdered and killed and tortured and been tortured and whatever. So we've been there. We've done that. We can move on.
Yeah.
And we know not to move into those spaces in this world or to be born in Palestine, and whatever, to be bombed like right now into smithereens, with all the hate and anger that's involved between the Israelis and the Palestinians going on in this world. So we choose to be born with certain parents, certain environments to accomplish certain objectives for our own learning. Like for me, being born into a family of some of the best earliest colleges, interestingly enough, it's helped me to understand the universe better because I know now that the laws of nature apply across the universe, just like the laws of physics, and that if it's happening here, it's happening elsewhere, and just more diversity and variety.
There's a lot of information on your website, and this is on Weebly, and that's, I think, huge because you're offering it free. You're not making people, there's no paywall. This is stuff that you, over 55 years, that you have gathered.
I don't even make money off the print books because they wanted me to resubmit all my financial data and stuff and whatever. I didn't want to go through the hassle, but they're just accumulating what you... dollars that I do make, on the print copies or whatever. But it's important because some people want to have print copies. I don't even make any money on that now.
Well, and that's, there's another guy who, John Foster, UFOs, he said, there's no money on the books, but his information is so fantastic because he had decades of encounters where he can tell you some of the behind the scenes. When at one point, I think this was in high school, there were some bullies around him and the UFO guard, they came forward and they pestered the bullies, and he's able to see this. The guys see it at the time. I have no idea what they thought later on in life, if they even remembered it. But he had huge experiences where there were huge crowds and able to see the UFOs, and the people there just went on like there was nothing going on. Or he saw people frozen. They were completely, everybody around him still while an event was happening, and some people saw it, others there was no way that they would even have any way to remember it because for them it didn't happen. But for him to see these things and have this, there was a program they were involved in that he remembers, that he's written about in three books and on his website talking about their plans to bring children from the immigrants from South America and put them in schools and house them. And that plan, that particular program didn't come to fruition because the people either died or became in some way, involved in something else. They didn't try to manipulate. They tried to get people to agree to participate. And that was one of the experiments that he was involved in. And the frustration is that trying to tell his story, it's so incredibly involved, intense, detailed, that for some people it's fantasy. And for him, it isn't. He knows, and he had witnesses who were with him. There's going to be a documentary coming out later this year with him. But the frustration is that these things are available. It's just that the audience has no clue in terms of discerning whether this is real or fiction. And that's where there's a disconnect of we can't prove it. There's no science to prove that these people had these experiences, so people tune out.
Yeah, well, a lot of the problems that people have, as well as another, I was fortunate to be raised up in the scientific community, where you have a mechanism for separating fact from fiction. And I trained myself by reading in books on intelligence gathering and analysis to train myself to do the same thing. And you got to be able to gather the information objectively and openly and then analyze it and come up with conclusions that you then test against reality. And that's what the scientific method is basically about. And the same thing as intelligence gathering analysis is about, to be able to sort out what's real from what's not, because obviously there is a lot of this society is not interested in truth. You know, there's a lot more money to be made in lies than there is with truth. You know, people like Alex Jones figured that out pretty quick, you know, and got into a lot of trouble. You know, he helped expose the Bilderberg group and the control group and whatever, but then he got into the Sandy Hook cases and whatever that he knew was a lie and promoted that and made $200-300 million, you know, and then apparently lost it all when he's got sued over and whatever. So you got to develop these skills. And unfortunately, most of the people don't have the skills or the interest or the intent to sort out facts and fictions on something of this nature. Well, they're just not at that point in their evolutionary processes. I would think they're probably young souls a lot of times.
There are some organizations, the Soul Foundation, SOL Foundation, is one of the ones I pay mm-hmm. attention to that is a recent development. But Gary Nolan is a researcher. And Gary, Harvard background, he's a science researcher. The thing I like about him, and this is what I think is going to change the way we go forward, is that as a child, he had an experience in his bedroom.
Yeah, he experienced the grays.
Yes. And so the first time he saw Whitley Strieber's book, Communion, which is I had the same kind of reaction. Mm-hmm. He saw the front photograph or picture, and he said he just almost, you know, went into shock because that's what he saw when he was a child in his bedroom. I know I bought the book and then thought, you know, I don't need to have this element in my space because at the time I was too close to home. And not that I remember seeing anything like that, but it was that thing of, I don't want to attract this. I'm not ready for it. And I had other experiences that were more paranormal. And that was my own sense of self-preservation, protection of, and let's keep this one a little further away until I'm ready to open that door. But
Peter S.K.A. Fish, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. You know, he talked to a friend of mine, said he wants to devote, at the Soul Foundation, wants to devote the rest of his life to encounter cases.
Yes, that's where we learn. Until we start listening to the people who've actually had full-on encounters, or you know, even like what I've had, seeing these things that shouldn't be here, then we're not going to learn. We learn from every single person who's had contact, encounter, and influence, and that they can track and that they understand this shifted their reality in some way. That's how we evolve.
Yeah, and we learn from the cons in the field, you know, not how to be sidetracked and to be cons and to avoid those cases. But the nice thing about Artie Clark is that she's already cut through a lot of all that, you know, for the general public that doesn't have the time to really to study this that much to get to the point where we are. So that's why I tend to, you know, I think Artie Clark is head and shoulders is the best set of encounter cases for the general public and for people in the UFO community that should know about Artie Clark and don't even have a clue. And they're still speculating about whether the Twitter pundits, you know, speculating about the existence of non-human intelligence. They're going to have to change that word too, because a lot of this intelligence is human, just like we are. We're part of a larger human community. And that's why I personally have been getting involved with the New Paradigm Institute and Jim Garrison and Kevin Wright, and involved with a small rally for a Schumer rally in to support Senator Schumer in New York. My main thrust is to try to get them to New Paradigm Institute. Is my hope is that they're going to become the NAACP of the cosmic rights movement, because this all boils down to, you know, our cosmic rights, you know, our nature of our reality has been classified and denied us and denied to the public. And the public is so dumbed down that a lot of the public doesn't even know if extraterrestrials exist or not. And it's really pathetic, you know, and sometimes it's hard to deal with, you know, especially when you get out front of the rest of the people in the UFO community, and you're 30 years or 50 years ahead of their thinking, and they're just kind of stuck going around in circles thinking, well, is this real or this isn't real or whatever, yeah. instead of, you know, having to have the permission of the government to be able to think, you know, whereas what I'm saying is you don't have to have the government's permission to think. You can route around it through the encounter cases, because over the past 100 years, there's a huge number of encounter cases of people that have just run into extraterrestrials for one reason or another as they go about their business. And if you can begin to sort that information out, you can do a complete end run around the government and also help, you know, protect yourself from the government disclosure process that are going to use the partial truths and fearful partial truths like cattle mutilations and human mutilations in order to get the Congress and the public to back off and not investigate further.
Well, the person that I really admired for trying to get a little bit of the word out, Ingo Swann, the book Penetration, he was writing that while he was still under a non-disclosure agreement. He was writing that and trying to put out little bits and pieces of, well, what if, or suppose this, or it might seem like, when he said that he was introduced via someone affiliated with the government, not necessarily up front, but maybe behind the scenes. And then his encounter with a UFO, which scared him to death, he said that what they asked was, okay, what did you think about that? And he said, well, next time you expose me to something like that, be prepared to let me at least have a clue, because I can't make any assumption when I'm frightened out of my wits. I'm paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. But that was a thing of, okay, they wanted him to do something without telling him what they were going to do. And then they wanted him to offer an assessment. He's like, well, that's great to know now.
Yeah. I think I read that. Wasn't that the case where there was an extraterrestrial human lady in the checkout counter line in a grocery store or someplace?
And he said you can tell, he could sense the difference between someone who was not of our, you know, our species. Penetration is the book. And you can go on Ingo Swann's website and ingoswann.com. His niece has tried to make all sorts of information there public, because that was Ingo's goal, was to get this information out there. I think they have a special page on non-human intelligence and more than that. But with his information, there's so much that has to do with not just an ET encounter, but telepathy and knowing what you are getting into, because he was a remote viewer, also a psychic. And so when he would have these encounters, it was when, I think it was the moon or Mars, I believe it was the moon, when he was supposed to do this remote viewing session, and all of a sudden, what he was looking at him. And he's like, oh my God, they know I'm here, and out of it. And then that's okay, I'm done. Because it was hostile. Mm-hmm. You're interfering. You don't belong here, and busted. Those encounters and those experiences take us forward, because it isn't just about somebody saying it's okay for you to know this. It's like, look what I experienced. It's up to you whether you believe it or not, but do your due diligence and at least read a few things from various sources to try and get whether the person who's giving the information wants you to be an acolyte. Are they trying to get your money? Are they trying to get you to join some program before you get any information? Or are they just trying to help you up your game and say, this is what's available, this is what I know, this is what I've experienced, you go forward. But once you determine that, that gives you, I think, a way of sensing whether someone is authentic.
Yeah, people have to be prepared to be mentored, but at the same time realize, you know, sort out who is just conning them to take advantage of them.
Yeah.
And so, and also, once you get to the point where you can learn from other people and you can sort out the frauds from the real cases and whatever, you make a really big jump in your consciousness, because that way you're not reinventing the wheel. There's so many people stuck that are just sitting there going round and round in circles, and they're not really evolving and gaining in their understanding because they don't trust what other people have to say, you know, because of that some people are frauds and some people lie. And unfortunately in society, there's a lot more material value in lying and deceiving others than it is to telling the truth.
There were a lot of people who were accused of lying. And when you're talking about Roswell, there was a whole lot of disinformation about that. And then when you talk about the children of Roswell and the other people who were in that area on site during that time period And then the researchers who, Tom Carey is one of them, who went back and spoke with the kids. And there's more to the story, but it was completely deep sixed. And the people who were involved were told to be quiet or there would be repercussions. This is the kind of stuff that happens where there may be an immediate pushback with someone who is authentic.
The military has no understanding. You know, they're looking out for the security of the people, but they have no understanding what they've got themselves into. And because of their compartmentalized operations and whatever, they even know less than we do. They're operating on the outside and involved in encounter cases. You know, they have to go to us to be able to understand the big picture because it's so compartmentalized in the military and controlled. And they don't, and the military just doesn't seem to have a clue to the evolutionary damage they have done to this society in the past, 80 years or 100 years, you know, by focusing completely on security and total spectrum dominance, you know, because of some of the predatory extraterrestrials, they shut us down, the society down from getting an overall situational awareness. You know, why in the world would you destroy the situational awareness of the herd in order to protect it? That only favors the predator.
Unfortunately, the fear factor is also a big part of that, too, from the top down. What do we do when this becomes...
The fear of the unknown.
Yeah. So here we are. At least we now have more access. And your website is a great resource with your books, with the work that you've done for 55 years, the fact that you were protesting back in the 90s out there on the White House, the Capitol, saying, you know, hey, pay attention, open your eyes, this is real. Unfortunately, we're still in that same, I think, state, you know, even though the Congress is now involved.
I'm now 75 years old. I'm, you know, working through my cabin and through my barn to do my end of life house cleaning, you know, and anything that I'm not going to use in 10 years, I'm throwing away or, you know, giving it away because, you know, it's important that because our lifetimes are so short and apparently have been shortened deliberately, possibly in our history, and it really should be around 1,000 years, you know, which would be much better. But because our lifetimes are so short at 70 or 100 years at a maximum, it's very imperative that we be like fruit flies and that we adapt very quickly and that we educate the new generation and leave paper trails. And so that's what I've tried to do is leave a paper trail of my knowledge that other people can build on, just like I myself have built on their shoulders.
Well, I tell you, between you and Artie, I mean, 55 years is a tremendous effort and a tremendous amount of insight to push forward. You mentioned Albert Rosales. There are some other websites like that that have so much information. Mm-hmm. It is available to the public. It's free of charge. And all it takes is Google.
How far are you from Belgrade, Montana?
A ways. I'm in Kansas. Kansas.
Oh, you're in Kansas. Well, you're a lot closer than I am. But apparently, Artie is in very ill health. And what I've been told is that she's been taken care of by her husband. So it's kind of up to us to promote her works because it's basically an extraterrestrial intervention to help everybody on this planet. And she's head and shoulders above everybody else on it. And that's why I'm a broken record in advocating her work. But we really need to go there because if you look at her cases in her books, you know, she just skims the surface on a lot of these encounters that these people have been interacting their whole lives and sometimes generations, you know, with the extraterrestrials. And they have a lot of knowledge that really needs to get out into the public domain. And you really need a team. I kind of suggested that the New Paradigm Institute is they really need to put together an encounter team to go out and find out what's happened with Artie Clark and to see if there's some way to contact some of these individuals that have widespread encounters over their lifetimes to get all that cultural, anthropological ET information.
That's another question. I've talked with her publisher, and I actually have tried to connect with her over the past 4 or 5 years, saying, if you can, please preserve your information. I don't know if she has a plan for that, but I was thinking the UFO Museum at Roswell because they are collecting this kind of stuff.
Yeah, you know, at Montana State University, she has, I think she got $23 million for a scholarship program for a very large number of indigenous students. Mm-hmm. And so it may very well be going to go to Montana State University. But the problem is, she said is she was going to destroy the tapes after she had written down the interviews in order to protect the people and whatever. So, but, you know, there's an incredible amount of 4,000 cases that we don't know about except for what's in her books.
There's more than that, because what she had was also people who were not Indigenous. And she said her publisher wasn't really cool on that one. but she had them. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you know, there's another.
So why hasn't somebody, you know, why hasn't somebody just gone over there, gone to her hometown, is in Belgrade, Montana, and develop relationships with the people there and find out what's happened to her and what we can do to get this, get into this gold mine of information that, you know, could largely be destroyed or whatever if it's not handled properly.
Part of that, though, would be up to her relatives.
That's building relationships. You got to go talk to them. You got to go see if you can talk to her husband, talk to close friends, you know, go to the cafe and talk to people, you know, and whatever, and gain their trust and understanding. So, you know, why don't we, put together some where somebody does that? Maybe I'll do it next year. You know, I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, well, somebody maybe. I'm already connected with John Foster. I'm trying to help him because his information, I think, is crucial. He's an engineer. The background within engineering helped him draw the diagrams and the machine, the things that he saw, also the beings. He had, there's three different kinds of beings that he encountered. And I want him to save it because right now he's in that, he's 80, he's in his mid-80s, and the health issues have been lifelong because of some of the encounters that he, when he remembered it, his brain went fried. So,
some of the people, especially that have been abducted against their will and whatever, you know, been harmed and had to deal with the actual physical issues and stuff and whatever.
Well, he told him he wanted to stop. He wanted to get out of the program. He said, I've had enough. I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to be part of this. And they said, well, it's going to cause a problem when you remember this. So just so you know that you're going to have this problem, you'll be okay. You'll recover. But your heart is basically, I'm paraphrasing, going to take a hit, which it did. He had a heart attack. When this stuff all came to the surface and he started remembering, then he had to deal with it. Did not fit with his version of reality. And so the health issue, he's now down to a third of his heart, which people are, that's huge.
It threw him into an existential crisis. You know, I had that as a young man, but I was young, you know, I was in my early 20s, you know, and was able to power through it.
Yeah.
But at his age, that's a, it's a different situation.
I think it was 1986 and then 1989, 91, he started going public. You're talking about being there protesting or trying to make some kind of a point in 1993 in Washington.
Make a statement.
He's out there trying to tell his story, and he has people around him who are validating that he is perfectly sane. This is legit, but it really messes with our version of reality. And that's what I want his story to go forward, because it connects all the dots of an experiencer remembering, and they also had multiple witnesses during most of his events. So he wasn't alone. And so there it is, that whole piece of the pie that says this is something that the clandestine activity that's happening right under our noses. He's trying to connect the dots and give you clues how you can possibly identify maybe a parallel or similar situation in your own daily life. And there it is, right there.
You learn from the patterns. You don't learn from any one particular individual. It's the multiple individuals that you feel are credible. You see the patterns that emerge, from all these cases, and you put it all together into the big picture, you know, just like the terraforming operations, you know, that a lot of people would read Ari Clark and not really connect the dots as far as, you know, the discussion of terraforming operations or the case in South America where they were building an arboretum, or helped build an arboretum up in a space city or whatever, or a huge spaceship.
Okay, what's your website so people can connect with you?
Okay, it's Kamarek. KOMAREK.weebly.com. And you can probably just look up my name on the internet and find it. You may find my own blog, exopolitics.blogspot.com. That's a lot of my old material back from decades ago, part of that paper trail, you know, and you can search that to get that information. But some of you can just get my name, Ed Kamarek, K-O-M-A-R-E-K, and Google it, or go to Bing. Sometimes Bing is better than Google, because Google is not coming that good of a search engine anymore for a lot of stuff.
Okay. Your biggest experience, personal experience, that shifted your awareness?
Probably my existential crisis, you know, in which I was felt like I was a chick and an egg, you know, and I had to break out or die. It happened over about 2 or 3 years, and I went into a deep depression. I did psychedelics, which were really quite helpful for me. And after the last LSD trip that I had, I blacked out. And then I went down to a friend's cabin, and I laid down in the bed, and I said, this is all there is to life. I don't want to live anymore. And then these three beings contacted me, like I can only conceive of as like dewdrops in the morning, just very beautiful, but I couldn't conceptualize them. And they just laid it out for me, you know, your path is truth, your vehicle is honesty, and the fuel for your vehicle is love. In a thought form, and you know, I'm breaking it down into words, but it was actually a thought form, and that thought form showed me that there was much more to reality. I need to clean up my act and do a good, thorough mental and emotional house cleaning, and it's been up ever since. And I feel like, you know, like you, I have telepathic contact with these ethical extraterrestrial beings, and I try to do what I can to help them, and they do what they can to help me.
The one thing I can say with my experience, which sounds similar to your understanding, the big deal, and Ingo Swann even does this, Master of Harmlessness, do no harm. It doesn't mean you're not going to do something wrong, you're going to do something stupid, but it means do what you can without an intent to hurt or harm another being.
Yeah, try to help others as you help yourself, because it's like, you reach down, it's like a stairway to heaven, you know, you reach up to somebody that pulls you upward, but you got to reach down below to pull somebody up below you, up with you. So if you don't share good quality, high quality information that you learn and as you grow and whatever with others, you're really denying not only others that information, but you're denying yourself and limiting your consciousness.
They stop working with you. Basically.
Well, if it goes off track, I think that's what happened with Billy Meyer. I think Billy Meyer was having real experiences. His first contact book made a lot of sense. Second contact book didn't. It looked like he was inventing stuff. And I think what happened was is he started building a cult around himself, and then they retreated, and he had to invent, you know, stuff to keep his cult going and crash and burn.
Yeah, he got sidetracked. Supposedly he's back on track. He's still having encounters now that seem a little bit closer to home, away from the cult.
Mm-hmm. But if I would understand, you know, if I was the human extraterrestrial, the Palladians and whatever, as soon as he started going off on his personal ego trip, you know, whatever, I would have had to withdraw, you know, from him. And then that left him with nothing other than to deceive other people in order to maintain his cult.
I think that's a big challenge, and I think that happens all across the board from anyone who gets successful. Then they have to figure out, so what is really important to me? You know, where is my...
Yeah, it's your integrity. Is loyalty important, or is integrity important?
Yeah.
It's most important. You know, integrity for me is most important. It's most important, you know, my own integrity. And so I know that if I want to know truth, I've got to be truth. I can't lie. I can't deceive others. I can't harm others. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise I could be standing on the truth and it would look like a lie. And that's what's the trouble with a lot of people. They're such liars and they're such deceivers in their own personal lives and whatever. They can't conceive of the truth right when it's in front of them or somebody is speaking it to them. They can't sort it out. So the first thing people got to do is just stop lying. Even little white lies degrade into much larger lies. You start lying to other people in little ways, and pretty soon you're lying to yourself, and you fall into this pit of self-deception.
The telepathy thing is a double-edged sword.
Yeah. You're creating your own reality telepathy, by drawing the aspects to yourself that are not truthful in understanding the nature of yourself or of reality. And you get into a destructive feedback loop, but there's no thing anybody can do to help you until you burn through it and realize that you made a mistake. And then you got to pick up the pieces and move on. And that's the trouble with people nowadays. They're being taught that it's okay to lie, you know, by television, by corporations, by everything, that, you know, being a liar, you know, makes you successful in life and whatever. Well, it might help you materialistically, but it's extremely destructive to your evolving nature.
Well, we're all here to evolve. We're all here to grow. And this is, I think, part of the program right now. We have to go through these rough spots to figure out which way's up.
Yeah. And then the main thing that I tell people is don't lie. Just say it's classified. If you don't want to talk about something, just say it's classified or something. Don't make up a lie about it.
Yeah.
You know, because you know, just try to always tell the truth whenever possible. And if it's somebody else, you know, one friend, I got pretty upset at him and chewed him out because I got a phone call from the police and he had used me as a reference to go join the police department. And he asked me if he'd done drugs before. And I had to say no. And boy, was I upset, you know, because that he put me in that kind of position where I had to lie to protect him, you know, and I don't, you know, so you got to get to the point where you just don't lie, because the lying obscures your ability to know truth.
Once you start, it's difficult to turn the corner with that. So, okay, on that note. On that note, we've tried to do is, to the best of our ability, present things that we believe to be true. And that's where we end it. And it's up to you as a listener to determine what truth is for you. How's that?
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We could talk for, you know, 4 or 5 hours and continue. I appreciate your information, and I want people to check out your website, and I'm going to put links in the description for the show. Thank you for your time, and thank you for all that you're doing, and don't stop.
Send me the link and I'll spread it around too.
Ed Komarek, 55 years researching UFOs and ETs. Books are available on Amazon and on his website, komarek.weebly.com. And links are in the description for the show. Thanks for listening.